Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show and a continuation of our last couple of weeks dealing with the life of souls. And if you don't know it, this is the show that deals with metaphysics and spirituality. It hopefully fills a gap in the understanding of, we'll say, science beyond what is presently understood in the traditional realm of science, and also in terms of spiritual issues. It deals with all sides of that concept, everything from the more traditional elements to things that are maybe a little bit far out for some people. And in today's show, we're going to continue in dealing with souls and how they, from their perspective, live their life and how it interacts now with human life, because today's show, unlike the last couple of weeks, is going to be dominated by the perspective of human souls. In the prior two shows, we were dealing with, souls that were not yet developed into the capability of creating life forms that are humans. So those were souls that dealt with animals and plants and pre-life, I call it, which would be like mineral souls. Now, this is maybe a new concept for you. If it is, that's great. If you would like to call in and make a comment or ask a question, whatever, you can do so if you're in the U.S. by calling 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, try 888-815-9756. Love to hear from you. Now, let me continue on by prefacing today's show with this idea. And that is that us, human beings, are really a piece, a part of the consciousness of a being that cannot, because of its restrictions, which I'll explain in a few minutes, cannot survive, cannot exist in the realms that we exist within, because it has to, would have to, as we have bodies and senses that limit its consciousness and its ability to function, therefore, in its own, in the thinking of its own creator, within the realms of time and space that human beings can and do exist in. Now, what are these realms? I will mention them. They are the monastic world, especially the lower mental, and some people just call that the mental world itself, the astral world, some people call it the emotional world, or something like that, but generally astral is the accepted term. And then these are a series of different types of places. There isn't, when I say world, it isn't like one single place, because there are, we'll call them sections or subsections of a whole dimension that these subworlds exist in. And then there's the etheric physical, where, of course, I am located, and you are too, I would think. And this part of time and space is the most difficult to exist in. But all three of these, where human beings live out their lives, are extremely difficult places for a soul to inhabit, because once you create a body and senses, you become part of the energy that exists within those dimensions. And that makes sense, because we aren't just living as thought, we're living as, we'll say, energy beings as well. And the energies of these dimensions interfere with our ability to think, our ability to reason and create knowledge and have good judgment, and to behave in ways that resemble the ways that souls tend to live their life. And so this is a problem that souls get around by creating us. We call them incarnates. And as a human being who lives through a cycle of time in which, I'll give you an example. We live somewhere between whatever time up to 100-plus years in the physical world, depending upon the choices we make and our soul makes. And then also, we might live for hundreds, literally hundreds of years, while in the astral world. Now, that's time as it is exists in that world. That's not the same time we have here, because of a change in the way time exists called dilation. And then we go on to live, finally, still being us, in the lower mental world, and that could be for up to 1,000 or more of mental years. But again, it's a relatively short period of time when measured in terms of physical time, because the dilation numbers get much larger as we live in dimensions of time and space that are more complex. You might say, well, oh, that sounds really far out. Who came up with that crazy idea? And it was someone named Einstein. So that's the point. I mean, it's not, that isn't really that far outside of normal physics. The idea of multiple dimensions is not necessarily accepted in the standard model in physics, at least as it is today. But the idea of time dilation has been accepted since, give or take, sometime between 1905 and 1920. So this has become part of physics, even though it isn't extrapolated all the way into actual dimensional places where people live this way. But I know differently. I've been there and experienced it, so that's how I know. Now, getting to the process. The process is that human beings are going through this, we'll say, incarnation time to be the co-creators with their souls, because we're still part, we're still connected to ourselves, to gain a development, or the opportunity to develop, I should say, more of their creator by co-creating in its thought, in we'll call it God's thought, those things that are virtuous and good in these lower dimensions of time and space that are very difficult to do so, and that our souls, if they directly try to experience, would become as lost as we are. Because remember, we're only lost, we're only in illusion, we only make the mistakes we make, because this is such a difficult place to inhabit and co-create in. And so our mission from our soul is to come into these realms and to do the best we can, knowing that we're going to get kind of lost, and some of us are more lost than others, depending upon how long we've been doing this and how successful we've been doing it. So our history, which some people call karma, kind of enters into the picture. And how many times does a soul create some being, us, to do this? Well, hundreds of times. The average is probably between 700 and 800 times. But to give you an exact number, there is no such thing, although some sources claim there's 777. But these numbers are really more or less still averages. And to say it's somewhere between 600 and 1,000 lifetimes would probably be pretty accurate. And that's still a lot of times. Now, are we always the same person? No. Now, the person or personality of us is a very limited a limited form of our consciousness. Think of it this way. It's like, for what would be our, to our perspective, say, a week of our lifetime, somebody gave us a pill, and the pill allowed us to forget 95% of who we really are. Maybe 98% would be a fairer number. We said we forget 98% of who we really are, and we fill in the blanks of the 2% of who we think we are, or who we know we are, with 98% of a bunch of goofy things that are very selfish and limiting, and even self-destructive and destructive to others that we are connected with and we are trying to co-create with. So that's what happens. But it seems seemingly to us it would be a week, and that's not such a terrible thing. And then, within a relatively short time, a couple of days, say, we start getting back our 98% that was lost and correct most of the things that we were confused about And suddenly we awaken to being our soul, and we say, oh, gee, I forgot who I was. And this just keeps happening. But every time it happens, the 2% who we are is different. It's changed around, so we get more and more successful, and we gradually go from 2% to 3% to 4%. And so eventually we become more and more our soul while we are living in these lower dimensions of time and space. And eventually we exceed our soul because we are the composite of not only the soul, but the being who is creating itself beyond the levels that the soul ever could have done because it didn't have the ability without losing itself to be here in the first place. So we're helping to grow the soul while we grow ourselves. So this great geometric formation of consciousness eventually leads to the, we'll call it the ascending of our soul to beyond its level. It's always slightly increasing with every lifetime, but some of the later lifetimes, the last few, become so great in the development of virtue while in the lower realms that the soul tremendously grows and actually is freed from ever having to incarnate again and becomes a new kind of being. We will talk about that later today. But I think it's so important to recognize that this is not a punishment, that we are not impeded by some outside force to live the life that humans live, that we chose to do this while in a greater level of consciousness. And for this week's time, remember I'm using that as a relative issue, we are going off doing this part in trying to co-create with our Creator in these lower realms, while the rest of us, the other 98%, so to speak, for a lot of our lifetimes, is enjoying a life, which I'm going to talk about next, in the higher realms, and in places where it is used to living a much advanced and more developed life than anything that we will experience until the very last lifetimes that we live. So it's while physically and astrally and or mentally alive. So this is a most fascinating kind of scenario that if you are following what I'm saying, I'm of course doing it very quickly. I could spend an entire couple of shows just talking about that piece of the puzzle because it's a lot to explain. But if you're following it, it makes a lot more sense. And it starts to put the whole perspective together so that you could say, well, now that I know that, this is really an explanation of why incarnation is so much part of the process. Because unfortunately, if you don't understand the pieces that I'm explaining, what happens is it kind of doesn't make a lot much sense. For a lot of people, they say, well, so what? Okay, I lived out my life, I was an incarnate, personality's gone, does that mean I don't exist anymore? Well, you see, the part of you that didn't exist was always that part was that what you were separated from while you lived in illusion. So the illusion is caused by our personalities being too selfish and being blind to very much of things. So we're really going back to a state that we were in as we develop ourselves back through the higher dimensions of time and space and die from one and move to the next. And so it isn't like we're being deprived of anything. It isn't as though we're being punished. Other than you could say, well, the greatest sacrifice we're making is while we're physically alive. And the sacrifices become somewhat less as we move into a higher dimension where there is more of the ability to understand and co-create more of our Creator. And we do that because the time and space that is around us allows our senses to be much more accurate and to sense our co-creator, sense our Creator much better. But while we're physically alive, the challenge is to be able to do that. And for many people, we just simply don't do very well at it. And then we have to keep trying to achieve this by creating a new personality that may be improved upon by that which we gained in the last lifetime or two, and also by the development, the co-development of our soul with many other souls. So let's talk about that, because that's really the big deal. what is the life of a human soul like? Because talk about somewhat the life of group souls, they're getting little bits and pieces of what life is like or pre-life is like in these lower dimensions of time and space from thousands up to millions of life forms that they ensoul. Sometimes it's even minerals. They're getting a very small fraction of information from each, but combined together, collectively, it's a significant amount, but it is nowhere near what one soul gets from a single incarnate. You might say, well, how is that? Well, here's how it works. You see, when a group soul is informing the life of, let's say, a bunch of flies. I don't know if I like flies so much, but we'll think of flies. Okay, all the little flies that are running around, and it could be only a single species of flies, or even a subspecies. It's getting a little tiny bit of added information that's new from a fraction of all the flies, because most of the flies are not doing anything that is all that unique or different. A fraction of the flies are actually developing some uniqueness and difference that the group soul gains a better understanding of the environment from. When you see it from that angle, evolution takes on a totally different picture. Rather than evolution developing the fly, evolution is being used as a tool to help the soul to gain a better understanding, and then the soul participates in choosing which traits actually end up being reproduced in the next generation of flies. You might say, oh, that changes everything, especially if you're an evolutionist. And if you are and you're listening to this, give me a call. I'd be glad to discuss it with you more. So when you look at this, you start saying to yourself, well, wow, that really adds another dimension to the concept of evolutionary biology and actually explains some enigmas that are coming up in that field, which I have a great deal of respect for. And I think that in general, it does explain a great deal about the structure or design of the Creator and how it seeks to give freedom to life while at the same time giving some direction, both, which is amazing. I'm just in wonder at how this process really fulfills both sides of the equation, so to speak. And so then when we look at this process, we could say to ourselves, wow, group souls are only minimally, very small amounts, gaining very much at all from a whole bunch of life forms. And even the most advanced of life forms that the group souls inhabit or inform, unless they have contact with really advanced life forms like human beings, the group soul gets a very, very small amount of anything that's really new in the development of its own consciousness. Now, when it does, it shares a lot of this information with other group souls. Sometimes group souls that we would think would be an antagonist to the situation, like maybe frogs that eat flies, and we might say, well, why would it share with the frogs? Well, as far as the group soul is concerned, life is one thing. It's the growth of its creator, and it's seeking to develop more of this. And so if frogs become better at catching flies, but at the same time it helps frogs to gain better understanding of their environment that helps their group soul work better, then that's a good thing. But if frogs get better at catching flies and the group soul of frogs learns less in the process, that would not be a good thing. So in many cases, at least on this world, it's used as a contest, which many people could say is survival of the fittest, and it's where this one life is trying to adapt to the stresses of another life, etc. But what really is happening behind the scenes is we have the coordinated development of group souls to become more conscious through a relatively complicated process that is limited in its ability to be creative because it's so incredibly slow and difficult. It is based far too much on forces and what many people would say survival of the fittest, and evolution. Human beings are different. The human soul has a totally different, we'll say, way in which it can grow. Because human beings have a direct awareness of their own creator and seek to understand their creator and to co-create with their creator. Life forms below human do not do that. So we have a unique ability to do this because our souls come from the very best development of the qualities I just described in group souls throughout all of the various life forms on this particular planet. And so before a group soul can become a human soul, it has to develop in itself the ability to convey to whatever life form it's going to create, which in this case would be human beings, a fairly clear understanding that it is a part of the growth of its own creator and it is connected to a greater source of life, such as the soul itself, but also other things beyond the soul, which includes God, that is inherent in its own existence. And this is something that human souls can do, but group souls have to learn how to do this through the more complicated and, we'll say, circuitous route of dealing with mostly forces rather than spiritual understandings. Now, that doesn't mean the group soul doesn't understand in itself that it came from a greater being, but it can't convey this as a understanding or level of consciousness to the life forms that it informs because it doesn't have the ability yet to be able to do so and maintain the life of the form very long, like maybe even beyond minutes, because it is such a struggle to keep even the most adaptive life forms alive in the dense worlds that they inhabit compared to where the soul is. Soul is still struggling to understand these dense realms of physical Earth and to deal with these dense realms. So it's lost, so to speak, in many cases as new things happen. As the world changes around the life forms it inhabits, many times it fails and the life forms die. So there is minimal adaptation and minimal creativity in life forms informed by group souls. The opposite is true of human souls because of their closeness to their creator, because their souls are capable of informing them and keeping them informed of a higher level of consciousness. The human being can adapt very quickly to the surrounding environment because it is not just dealing with forces and struggle. It's also dealing with love and the creation of virtue and the ability to be inclusive with others of its kind, the ability to co-create with its soul the betterment of all life on Earth, if it so chooses. And so this is the fascinating thing, that now the group soul is closer, I mean the human soul, excuse me, is closer to the life form that it is inhabiting and that is informing, and it is the two are acting more as one, and also, and this is very important, human souls only inform one incarnate at a time. You might say, well, why don't they inform 20? I know some people that think that when one human soul has 20 people it's informing or whatever. The reason for this, and the reason that it won't work in that way, is because the human soul is evolved with the spiritual side much more than the form side of existence, because a human being has gone through the improvement in how to deal with the world from the form side through the human soul having been a group soul for millions of years. So ultimately, that isn't the part that we're really here to gain an understanding of. We're here to develop the understanding of balance with the form side, which we already have innately within us, and it's built on a system in which that part is really not the critical element. The critical element is for us to be able to understand and co-create with our Creator directly while we are alive in the lower dimensions. And this is so, we'll say, intimate to what the soul itself is doing, that we are at all times, unless we are evil, connected to our soul in a direct fashion. And because of that direct connection, we and the soul are always in some respect one in comparison to a group soul and the life forms that it is informing. That could not be said. That there is almost no connection between, let's say, an elephant in the wild and its group soul, because, unfortunately, the elephant is responding to the group soul mostly through instinct, and the instinct is preconceived thought, and there's no conception at the moment, in any particular time, that the elephant is understanding its relationship to its creator, either its soul or God, and therefore, since it can't understand its connection, it can't have a oneness with the soul. It's isolated from its own soul, because thought is what connects us. And so our thought is always connected, and wild animals and anything else that's alive are not. Now, there's an exception to this if the elephant or any creature becomes close enough to a human being. There may be some elements of its thought that is connected to its group soul and even to our human soul. There's some connection there in thought that's shared. And therefore, then you have kind of like the beginnings of how group souls can even gain a little bit of this experience of having a singular connection to a specific life form. But in general, they don't have that. And human souls have the opposite. They maintain this singular connection because they and we are thinking alike, and it's the connection in our thought that brings the energies between us together and starts to build a bond that allows us and they to start becoming more and more one, even while we're separated by time and space. An amazing concept, amazing. I wrote a book called Afterlife Love, in which two human beings were attempting to do the same thing while they live in different parts of time and space. And they actually accomplished this. But it's no different than what a soul and its incarnate is doing all the time. They started functioning as souls in both different parts of time and space, and they were able to achieve the same result. It's the same concept, because they, by functioning as souls, could join the difference between these two parts of time and space. That means they shared bodies, they shared senses, they shared thought, and they did so by creating enough light or virtue in the world around them. An amazing thing. Okay, so when we come back, I'll get deeper into this idea. I'll explain how the relationship between souls together in their own realm has an effect on the individual humans that they're working with, and how the life of souls is really incredibly joyous, amazingly more rich than our own lives are, and how we get back to that state. So we'll be back in, I'd say about 2.5 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we are talking today about the life of souls. And hopefully I'm making some sense. I'm covering a relatively wide subject, as I usually do, trying to get as much out there and explain whys so people can understand the concepts of how come things aren't the way they are. And so we were talking earlier about the differences between a group soul, which, of course, I've covered in the last couple of shows, and a human soul, which I find much more interesting to talk about, because the human soul is really involved more in the development of a spiritual being than in just the lower forms of life, the low human, which are more concerned about the development of senses and organs and interrelations of the form side of existence, which also leads to struggles and forces in life of life forms, particularly on Earth. Now, you notice I keep saying on Earth because there are other planets where evolution is modified considerably and the forces are limited by the souls themselves to a much lower level, which slows the development of life lower than human beings. By maybe twice as long to get to the same point. But it also provides human beings, when they finally do arrive on the scene, the opportunities to become spiritual with less stress and problems because they haven't come from a history of as much force in the development of their senses and the gradual development of consciousness. You might say, well, why don't we do that? That sounds better. Well, the advantage is speed. The more stresses, the faster the development of an appropriate form of life that can eventually be a consciousness of humans can be developed within. And in this world, we are struggling with prior developments of beings much greater than humans that weren't as successful. And Earth is a great experiment in dealing with some of the most profound and difficult elements of evil in the universe. And we need to quickly try to make up for our prior failures, not our personal, but the planet's prior failures on earlier planets that were developed. And so in order to make up for this, we were on the fast track. The fast track is very stressful, a planet that is highly, we'll say, complicated and difficult to deal with. And it still is. It's not an easy place to live. Other planets don't have as much tectonic movement, as much shifting of the environment, and life forms go through a lot less stress, but they take a lot longer to gradually develop themselves. But slower sometimes is just a lot easier. Okay, so back we are here, with the life of souls. What's that all about? Well, human souls are involved continually in sharing their information, specifically and very directly, about how well they're doing in co-creating more of their creator in the incarnates they are creating, while these incarnates are themselves interacting in the dimensions of time and space that the souls themselves can live in. And, of course, the etheric physical one, the one we're here right now in, is the most difficult of all of them to create life in, that life that will be more spiritual. Because human souls are very concerned about this balance of creating more spiritual kinds of life. Spiritual means life that thinks more like its creator and can co-create with its creator. That's exactly what the word spiritual means. And so this is what human souls are attempting to do. So what they do is they run like virtual realities where they practice and actually integrate all that they have understood and learned so far in all the incarnates that they have created, and see what is the best way for each one of them, changing around bits and pieces of different personalities that they could create, to come up with a likely scenario that would work out best, considering all the, and we'll call it karma, that their prior incarnates have created, and is part of the spiritual genes that they have to work with. So it's a difficult scenario, and they may try hundreds or even thousands of, we'll call them virtual realities, that can last for months or more at a time, and they interact as a piece of these personalities together. They now are not like us. They don't lose their ability to understand who they are. But they play out these scenarios as if though they were a new personality to see how it's going to work. And then they recognize and make changes on the fly to modify the personalities that they created to see if any of the modifications dynamically, because when one changes, it changes everything else, can improve the outcome. And they always have these limitations that they all are aware of in each other from their own karmic issues. So each is trying to help all others to do as good as possible. It isn't really concerned about having a quote-unquote most successful incarnation. To each soul that's human, a successful incarnation is the one that helps the most amount of all the other souls in the best and widest way possible to become more spiritual. And so this is a most interesting common denominator. So they're living as one being, in a sense, in terms of their development of a spiritual oneness, while they are at the same time becoming more and more individual, because they have to tweak themselves as they are involved in this months of period of scenario at a time of working out dynamicism that will allow each to achieve the best results likely to occur when they actually go through the process of incarnating. They do this with hundreds of souls at a time as a group, and that's how they tend to incarnate together, knowing that their individual incarnates are free to choose to do what they want to do. They're using, we'll say, probabilities, but they can't dictate. The incarnate that they create ultimately is still a free agent. And no matter how good they are at choosing the likelihoods of how a particular personality might react, they almost always have many, many, we'll say, mistaken ideas, because the incarnate itself is making the choices, and regardless of what they think that incarnate might be like, they're only as good at this as they have already experienced from all their prior incarnates and have an understanding of what might occur. And they get better. They get better with each incarnation. So the whole system is improving. But, and some are better at it than others, and some are worse, unfortunately. But they, since they work as a unit and as one, it doesn't matter as far as the outcome is concerned, because they are still struggling as a unit to come up with the best possible situation. But the outcome is still determined by the incarnates, the lower controls, we might say. Because the incarnates, if they do a bad job, that's us, you know, we're talking about us. If we do a bad job and we are very selfish, our soul suffers in its understanding, and then its future incarnations are going to be inhibited, and then there's karma. What is karma? That means that we have to correct the problems we've already created. So there's so much going on at one time. Now, I can tell you that the life of souls are incredibly rich, much more in depth than anything that human beings can ever experience, because they are living out, in the same time we're alive, they are living out hundreds or more of lifetimes, going through these scenarios with much more interesting results and dynamically changing as the process continues with the souls. They are advancing in consciousness far greater than we are in their own realm by interacting together and changing as they need to build a oneness, but at the same time developing their individual levels even faster than we could ever do so. And basically, they're living out fantastic amounts of life in their realm in comparison to the meager things we're doing. And you might say, but isn't that us? Yes, it is. We eventually go back into this full state of being our soul. We never lose consciousness. We only gain it in the process of dying from one dimension of time and space and expanding our life in the next. But from our perspective right now, these great beings are way beyond us and moving further and further beyond us than we are in our limited state, yet we're eventually going to become them, or we become them, I should say. So it's a fascinating thought process. You have to really, really think big and wide to wrap your head around this whole scenario that I'm describing, because we are the totality of the experience. We are not the limited part of just being the human being, because we eventually awaken to being our souls. So what our souls are doing is who we really are. We are not who we are now. We are really who our souls are. I hope you got that. And if I'm confusing you, it's okay. Believe me, this is hard to grasp, because we have such a limited viewpoint from our perspective as we are now that we accept a reality that isn't true. The reality that I'm telling you the souls live in is as close as you could get to within the monastic realm to say that that's the real thing. And actually, the souls themselves know that even they are illusions, because their limitations are the higher mental world's illusions, and there are some there. But they are so vastly improved over what we're existing in right now in the physical world that it's like night and day. Now, to a soul, it still finds itself limited. And what is limiting it? Well, it's limited because it doesn't understand the lower realms yet. It doesn't have the ability to live its life in all three or more, depending upon how you count dimensions, of the monastic, the astral, and the etheric physical. And it needs to eventually be able to unify those dimensions into a body and senses and mind and thought that is living simultaneously in all of these realms at the same time, and not separated by time and space and the limitations of bodies and senses. You might say, well, how does it do that? Well, it does that through mastering its life in all three of these major dimensions, to the point where they become one within itself, and its senses become one, just one sense of all that is in those dimensions of time and space. It still has technically seven centers, but only above the mental world. Below the mental world, it has like one sense of everything. And then we call those souls ascended souls that are, in terms of beings, are called masters. Now, you might say, oh, masters like someone who has gotten a degree or something. No, no. This is a being who has created itself beyond the level of human. It's the next stage. It's the next type of life. And it is a soul itself, a soul that is beyond the souls that I'm even describing to you that are human souls. It's a superhuman soul. And that's what masters are. They're superhuman souls. They exist because they develop themselves in full consciousness into a being greater than a human being and greater than a human soul is. So that's what our future is. All of us will get there eventually. But the process is fairly, by our standards, while we're physically alive, difficult and long. Now, to the soul, the human soul, it's enjoying a much richer life because all the time that we're struggling in these little nonsense issues and having great conflicts among ourselves and within ourselves and going to significant levels of suffering, the human soul is becoming a greater being and growing and gaining in understanding in vast amounts. And it's because it's gaining from all its compatriots, as it does these dynamic scenarios that I discussed, it has very rich relationships with the other souls that it is dealing with. It's becoming extremely inclusive and close while it is developing itself in many complex ways as a greater individual. So it's not losing its individuality. It is gaining in that while it's also developing higher levels of inclusiveness. And to many people, they seem like they're paradoxes. They seem like they shouldn't go together, but they actually do. And that's the so amazing part of this. So it's a wondrous system, a tremendously wondrous system. And so the human souls are the ones who are really enjoying the benefits, we'll say, of this process, while the incarnates, which is part of the human soul, is making the greatest sacrifices. And you can say, well, sacrifices, well, yeah, but I don't want to sacrifice anymore. How about, you know, I want to just go back to being my soul. But the thing is that when you go back to being your soul, you make the choice to do the separation that creates the incarnate. And we still are that choice. And there's no way around it right now. The human soul is trying to develop a connection so it is one being in all of these dimensions of time and space at the same time. Until it can do that, part of it has to suffer. And that part of it is us. We are not separate completely from our soul. That's the reason we have an individual soul and not a group soul. We are the soul, but we don't recognize it. And since part of the soul doesn't recognize its own self, then it causes its own suffering through its own lack of recognition and understanding of the separation. If we recognized and understood the connection with our soul, we would stop our own suffering, and we would live our life in a considerably different way, mostly like the soul already exists in the higher mental world. And we'd be living here as souls. Of course, if we did that, we'd start joining us with the senses and bodies and minds of our souls, and then we would be this super being. So I hope this is making sense. We are creating our own, unfortunately, suffering. We are creating our own isolation. We are making ourselves miserable. We are the proponents of our own misery. And it's only us that can change that. The soul is working around the clock to help us, but we are free agents. And this is part of the principles of God helping life to co-create rather than just to be a puppet of God. And so we have to be separate when we're not connected in energy with our soul, through form. We have to be separate and free as a life form somewhat separated by time and space to be by choice whatever we choose to be. If we choose to be like our soul, you can see how much better the whole process is. It's a great secret, but it's open as well to those who seek to understand. that those who are living their life, attempting to be their soul, will, over time, become less damaged, less in suffering, and increase their joy. But they have to give up some levels of, we'll say, excitement and other things to get the longer-term benefits. And for many human beings, even though it might be only years of time that they need to sacrifice, they don't. They want immediate gratification, immediate sense of something back for every minute that they live, and this causes them to make great mistakes. The soul recognizes that long-term and consistent spiritually disciplining themselves to create more of themselves into being a greater being, being more like their creator, is the ultimate answer. Human beings are in conflict with that concept a good deal of the time. That's what these shows are about, is to convince people to maybe put aside that idea and try the other side of it and see that over months of time, not necessarily minutes or days, life can become much, much more interesting, more beneficial, more joyful. But that takes some doing. You're not going to get it just because you were good for a day and say, well, no, I deserve everything that a soul is, and I want to live my life like a soul. That, unfortunately, isn't the reality. Remember, our time here is dilated in the opposite direction. We are moving like snails, and we're not what we think are days, weeks, and months is like almost, you know, it's an irrelevant issue because we are doing so little in that time to co-create with our Creator, whereas the soul is using its time much more effectively and has so much more, therefore, of time to live in. As we waste time, time becomes narrower and it fights against us. We seem never to have enough time to do anything. And everything becomes a desperate measure. We can change that. We can make it different. The soul's perspective on that is simple. From the soul's perspective, time is not its enemy. Time is its friend. And time joins with space and allows the souls to become one with all other souls. Here we use time as our enemy, and we become separated, isolated, and have a sense of struggle in everything we do. This is unfortunate, but this is the sense we have as we live our life. Souls have the opposite sense, which really leads to a totally different kind of reality for them. At any rate, we are out of time. Speaking of time, for right now, I want to mention that on this Sunday, November 9th, I'm going live. For those of you who have a chance to listen in, I will be live, and you can call in for the first time to my show on, let me give you the right call letters here, 1170 a.m. in Boston. If you are in the Boston area, and you can tune in, and that will give you an opportunity to listen in to both the show there and the show on WDISAM.com if you're outside of that area, and hear me on the radio. You can call it and talk, and please do. I would love it if any of our internet listeners can tune in, as well as those that are in the Boston area. Boston, I think it's Providence, Rhode Island, Norfolk, etc. If you're in that general area, you can tune in. And it's going to be, of course, it's still Wildlife Is, and still with me, Niles McFlower. And I'll be talking about spiritual initiation, part 3, because the other two parts were already sent in and done over the air, but it wasn't a live show. Those were recorded, and therefore you couldn't call in before. So I'm going to be doing that show brand new and live. Also, anyone who's in the Mesa area on November 17th, come by and hear Mimi and myself. I'll be there talking about Astral Glamours at Mesa Fiesta, Borders, Books, and Music, and that's from 7 to 8:15 p.m. And she said, please come by. We'd love to see you. And that's on, again, November 17th. Okay, so we are out of time for right now. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.